Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. This is episode number 106 for November 1st. We have a very special guest today, Kevin Unangst, Global Director of Games for Windows, here to answer reader and listener questions about the Games for Windows program.
ModShop.net, the new website from the editors of our sister magazine, Maximum PC. ModShop is the ultimate community resource for PC modders of all experience levels, and home to our monthly hardware deathmatch, where you can pit your best rig against all comers in a gladiator-style battle to win your share of the $2,000 monthly prize pool. Folks who have never picked up a Dremel can check out the amazing work and help to determine the winner of the monthly contest by voting in battles. Check out www.modshop.net today.
I'm your host, Logan Decker. With me today are Chuck Osborne, Senior Executive Editor.
Hey, everybody.
Dan Stapleton, Senior Associate Editor.
Ahoy.
Gary Witta, Former Editor-in-Chief.
Ahoy, hoy.
And Norman Chan, the Magic Intern.
I'll drink beer if I want.
Oh. And I'm drinking beer in the office.
This is not Good Nation.
Jeremy Williams, our fantastic podcast producer.
Well, if Gary gets to be the former editor-in-chief, how come I don't get a former title?
Jeremy Williams, former adult.
Touché.
Former male.
Juvenile.
Touché.
Everybody have a good Halloween? Yes? Fun? Candy? Beer? Oh, wait, you guys were at the Hellgate launch. Hellgate launch party. Well, come on, where's the excitement, the fervor, the...
It was quite an affair.
Well, yesterday was Halloween, because we're recording this on Thursday. There was a Hellgate launch party because Hellgate came out, I guess, 2 days ago.
And Hellgate came out yesterday. It came out on Halloween.
Yeah, there were some retailers were accidentally selling it a day early.
And then people were wondering why the servers weren't up.
I wasn't able to make the launch party because I had to go home and run a magnet over my apples. But tell me about it.
So we went, EA had a big party that they threw to celebrate the launch of Hellgate, and it was at a hip club in San Francisco, with this band Chromeo. And we thought it was going to be your typical, you know, industry launch party filled with nerdy journalists and gamers. So we came, some of us came dressed as, dressed in costume.
Well, the invitation said costumes strongly encouraged.
Right, right. So, Dan,
what did you guys go as?
Well, the Max.
I don't think I should say.
That's true. That because it might give an insight into your political bent. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, what did you go as, Norm?
I went as a scout from Team Fortress 2 with a bunch of the guys from Max PC, and we'll post some photos of our costumes online or in the magazine. But we got there, and the party was nothing like we expected.
Well, it wasn't so much the typical party as like a concert, almost.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was a concert, and it was open to the public, and there were 5,000 people who signed up to be on the guest list.
5,000 people. Wow.
Well, I guess they signed up to be on the guest list. They only let in like 500, so it wasn't that crowded, but it was still it was really packed in there.
And it was clothing optional.
And it wasn't just press people, right? It was like everybody.
Yeah, it was everybody. It was the majority of it was, you know, people, you know, hipsters in their late teens or early 20s. Dressed as wenches and pirates, and
it was a over 21 only club, so there was no.
Oh yeah, yeah, I guess yeah. Music.
It sounds like the rave scene from the second Matrix film.
A little bit too much.
Except far more interesting, or maybe not.
Except they let us in. They wouldn't let us in.
We got some good FaceTime with Bill Roper, the creator of Hellgate, while we were both in line. Bill Roper,
they made him wait in line. I can't believe that.
To get into the club.
What?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Bill Roper. I made this game in line, sir. Over by the bar. Over
that's
by the bar.
Nice.
They did let all the flagship people in first, though, but they had the whole place locked down. It was, you know, one of these very trendy clubs, so. Yeah, not really my kind of thing where I can't talk to anybody because the music is so loud. You know, you have to literally shout in other people's ears. Not really my scene. But,
there was no
chicken on a stick either.
That's one of the reasons I go to those parties.
Next.
Yeah. So, but I guess, Norm ran into some friends from the hipster music scene. Norm was big on,
it's very embarrassing. One of my friends asked, "So you're Mario?" And I had to walk away.
Oh. That's awesome.
Oh.
That's a me.
All right, let's just move on from there.
Hey, can we put some pics up on the PC Gamer podcast site for these?
We will definitely do that, right. Yeah.
Well, you may recall that a couple of weeks ago, Nolan Bushnell, I think, had put away a couple fifths of whiskey and went on a big rant about how today's games are trash and blah, 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 blah. What was the exact content of his...
He said, "Video games today are a race to the bottom. They are pure, unadulterated trash, and I'm sad for that."
Oh! Well.
Now, not so coincidentally, of course, Manhunt 2 was released this week. So, you know, okay, well, maybe he has a little bit of a point, but, you know.
Now, okay, I would like to go on a little diversion into Manhunt 2 here. We watched some clips. What was it, Norm, of the deleted scenes or uncensored?
No, well, Gary, I guess, knows this best because he's been following the development of the game. Do you want to talk about the video that you shared with everyone?
There was a video that showed up online of, I guess, the leaked version of the game that was submitted to the ESRB and subsequently given the AO rating and banned in the UK. So you got a good opportunity to see the full uncensored brutality of some of the kills in the game. And
so
you guys have seen it.
Was it a race to the bottom?
Yeah, I mean, you guys have all seen this video now, right? I mean, it's pretty boring.
It's appalling. Yeah.
I stopped watching when I saw somebody the top of his head being sawed.
Yeah, he gets the guy in a headlock and then saws his head off.
Yeah, but I mean, is that any different from like the movie Saw or Hostel or anything like that?
No, it's not. I want to say
a couple
of things
that
about
I don't
this.
Watch those.
The only thing to me that's more offensive than the brutality in Manhunt is the fact that they had to pointlessly neuter it to get it onto retail shelves. The annoying thing about it is I played yesterday the actual release version of the game, and you know the technique that they've employed to try and obscure the brutality of the kills with kind of shaky camera work and these kind of wacky visual effects that make it harder to see what's actually going on is really kind of a classic compromise in the sense that it's a solution that really nobody's going to be satisfied with.
Yes.
You know, the people that hate the violence in the game are still going to complain that it's as bad as it was before. You know, the filtering that they've done, you know, is not going to placate them very much at all. And the people that like that kind of stuff, you know, the kind of people that go to see Saw and Hostel and buy these kind of games and get off on it, are just going to be annoyed that, the what for them is the fun part of the game has been needlessly censored. So I don't, I think it's a cop out. And I regret the fact that as appalling as the game is, I do think that they should have been allowed to release it and let adults decide for themselves if it's something they want to play or not. What's really annoying is of course it's all been caught up again in the controversy of, must we subject our kids to this kind of stuff. Katie Couric was on the news this week complaining about it and oh my god, it's going to corrupt the minds of kids. It's not aimed at kids. You know, it's not for kids, and somebody on a message board.
Got that great big M on the box.
Well, I'll agree with you. I mean, it's not for kids, but at the same time, it's puzzling the formats that they're putting it out for. It's on the Wii, it's on the PS2, and the PSP. It's like what they couldn't fit it on the DS. I mean, you know, if you're going to play that sort of game, don't you want to play it on the 360 or the PS3 where you can really see the gore?
Demographically, the PSP and the PS2 are kind of naturally, the right formats for it. The Wii is a very, very odd fit. It's kind of a last-gen title, and actually the grainy, lo-fi look of the game actually, I think, suits you know, the last generation technology better. I mean, you know, we were talking about this the other day. Oh my God, what would this look like in high definition on a next gen system? You know, maybe we don't really want that. But I do think it's a shame that this has come to pass. Again, a lot of people this week going, parents shouldn't be buying this for their kids. And I saw someone online who rightly, you know, made the fairly obvious point of, yeah, you shouldn't buy porn for your kids either. Like, I mean, it's, you know, it's that common sense.
But does this validate what Nolan Bushnell was complaining about a couple of weeks ago?
No, because it's one game in an entire ocean of gaming goodness.
Nolan Bushnell has not played Peggle. Have you seen the racy cut scenes from Pong? They were into some nasty stuff there.
Pong,
those balls do things you can't even imagine.
Well, because yeah, I mean, the same time period we get, you know, the Wii also has Super Mario Galaxy and, you know, Mario and
right, right, but
Sonic,
but,
you know, going to the Olympics or whatever, you know.
Right, but DVD format, you know, video has both, you know, stuff for kids and stuff for adults. I don't see the you know, why video games are a race for the bottom, because some things are racing for the bottom, but other things are perfectly fine for kids.
Because it's, of course, it's the age-old perception that if you release a game, then it has to be for kids.
Yeah. Well, Will Wright, on the other hand, had a few more constructive things to say about video games. He is saying these days that we have too heavy an emphasis on graphics in today's games. He thinks that the processing power we use right now to crunch triangles would be better off, you know, being applied to physics and interactivity.
Hear, hear.
Artificial intelligence. Are we in agreement?
Yes.
Hmm. I think we can have both. I mean, because, you know, one of the most exciting, at least to developers I've talked to, one of the most, exciting developments has been, you know, the Wii, going back to that once again, and its interactivity. And, you know, I absolutely think that there's a place for both really high level graphics like those that we've seen in Crysis, but also, you know, new forms of gameplay that are bringing new people to gaming who have never played it before.
Okay, and there's really no reason to go entirely in one way or the other. I mean, you can have both, and as technology catches up, you put them together and get the best of both worlds.
But it is unfortunate there is a technological bottleneck in terms of how many CPU cycles you have, but you know, that's why there is a CPU and a GPU, and on systems, you know, like the PS3, there's a cell and there's a GPU, and the cells use primarily for AI and for the number crunching, and you can't use a GPU for AI, and so even like innovation in the Wii remote, you don't need a separate processor for that. It's just, you know, it's just a accelerometer, and so you can be innovative. I think there's no reason. I mean, aside from cost purposes, the Wii could have had fantastic graphics, but because Nintendo didn't want to put the money there to develop that, that's what the system we got.
Now, I do agree in most shooters that the balance is weighted far in favor of the graphics versus pretty much to the detriment of almost everything else. But
well, why do you think that is?
Well, I want to ask Chuck, who's now played Crysis through twice. Is that right? I haven't finished it yet, so I want to ask Chuck. What do you think about the balance between the graphics and everything else, the physics, interactivity, and AI of Crysis?
I'll say in the case of Crysis that the graphics are actually going to serve the sandbox nature of it, so that it's more than just a, you know, big graphical.
It's not a tech demo.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it just goes to serve the rest of the game. It's not like the graphics are the end all and be all of Crysis.
The graphics help to make it far more immersive. I mean, you're right out there interacting with the environment in a way that you can't do with in a game that just doesn't have those graphics. And to me, that makes you feel more like you're on the island. You've got all the ambient life. You've got, you know, the waters, the waves splashing up on the shore.
I think what Wright might be saying is that even though that's true, if you have these great immersive graphics, but then you hobble it with bad AI, then it neutralizes that effect.
Yeah,
so
I'm just wondering if Crysis. You've played Crysis enough to know what the AI
absolutely.
Is like.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we actually think that the AI is
Crysis
good.
Is the state of the art, you know, so I'm just saying, like, we finally reached a balance with Crysis where, wow, finally somebody's put the energy and effort and it's paid off, you know?
Well, I mean, like,
into something other than just great graphics.
I mean, Will Wright's point is that, you know, we should be using all the CPU cycles, or not all of them, but the majority of them for the simulation aspect of it. And that's what he does best, is simulations and just, you know, toy boxes, really. Where you've got, you know, like the Sims running around, and the Sims aren't supposed to be photorealistic. They're supposed to look like, you know, kind of cartoon characters, and they do that very well, and they've got all of the processing power going into their behavior. And that's really good for something like that, because it is not really dependent on what you as the player does for them to do what they do. I mean, they will respond to you as well. But they can have their own interactions and everything. With Crysis, and a shooter in general, it's a much different situation, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that we've primed appetites for Crysis, hey, but you know what? We're not torturing anybody. The demo is here. Mm-hmm. It has arrived. Helmet, now that's a huge demo, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like 1.87 gigabytes, and it will be on our January issue DVD.
Dun, dun, now, dun, I heard a very disturbing rumor about the Crysis demo, and it concerns Gary and Jeremy. I heard that you guys didn't really like it that much.
You know, I think there was a problem with my download, because I didn't get Crysis. I got Far Cry 2.
Now I hear this a lot, and I think it is just blatantly wrong. Because, and yes, you are on an island and you have guns. Outside of that, what is like Far Cry?
The free roaming aspect of the game.
Feels pretty much exactly the same.
How so?
You have a nano suit, but besides that, it's pretty much exactly the same.
Besides the game changing mechanic, it's exactly the same.
Yeah.
Look, I don't want to get into a big thing about this, because it's really a matter of opinion, and there's not necessarily any right or wrong here. All I know is
I really
tried to like it. And I played it a lot. And I told Dan this the other day, maybe 15, 20 times in the last week. I've loaded it up, going, I'm gonna like this game. I'm gonna figure out, you know, how to play it, and I'm gonna get it. And each time, after about 15, 20 minutes, I decided, you know what, f*** this. I've had enough of it.
Were you having technical problems?
It's a combination of many things. First of all, I mean, given that I've got a very, very high end system here, and it took me a long time to find what I felt was a satisfactory balance between the level of detail and the frame rate performance. And I finally...
What were those settings?
I can't remember exactly what they were.
Were you on medium or on high or what?
Well, I mean, they were all at different things. You know, I had some things on, some things off, some things high, some things medium, some things low, whatever. You know, different resolutions I experimented with. And I finally got it working. But, you know, I kind of felt like by the time that I had got it running at an acceptable frame rate, you know, so here's the point. Here's the thing that annoys me. And a lot of the hype for this game and a lot of the previews for this game have been centered around these amazing high-end graphic effects. But what you don't take into account when you write that kind of stuff is that for 99% of the people that are going to play this game, they're going to have to turn all that stuff off to be able to play it properly. So, I mean, what's even the point?
Well, for the review, we did play on the low-end system, right, Chuck?
Yeah, I did. Now, of course, you know, speaking to Gary's point, you don't get all the splendor when you do turn it down to the minimum specs.
But
right,
you don't get the turtle.
From what I got it down to, you know, you want games to feel fluid. I mean, I just came off, you know, playing Half-Life Episode 2, which, you know, obviously is not necessarily representing the highest-end graphics, but it looks pretty damn good, and it runs like butter. And then to go from that to have to fight with the system settings to get it running at anything like that level of fluidity and smoothness, by the time I was looking by the time I'd got it there, I was looking at these graphics and going, it looks like an Xbox 360 game, so what? You know, it didn't seem like it's possible to get the speed and the quality of the graphics that lived up to the hype that I had been led to expect. And then beyond that, I mean, and this is where you really just enter the realm of just personal opinion and taste. I didn't like the feel of the game. It felt sluggish to me. I didn't feel like the weapons were very accurate. I got frustrated in the combat. It seemed to take a lot of bullets to kill an enemy. And I know I'm not the only, Dan apparently heard enough of this that he felt compelled to go make a YouTube video to try and prove all these people wrong. So
and
I know I'm not the only
well
one that,
did.
That I know I'm not the only person who feels this way. I just didn't, you know, again, you either feel a game or you didn't. And I love the feel of games like Half-Life 2. And I played this, just felt sluggish. It felt kind of slow. The combat was annoying. It's just not for me. What can I tell you?
I think it's fair to say that, you know, you're wrong.
I'm never going to criticize anyone over a matter of taste, because I know I never really got Gears of War, and Norm loves Gears of War, so, you know, and a lot of people love Gears of War, so.
I can say for myself that I can't run everything maxed out either, but I'm looking forward, because I love the game, I'm looking forward to playing it again, as I do all my favorite games, in a year, and just throttling everything up and playing basically a new game with a whole new level of detail, and it's something I'm now familiar with. I'll be better at it, and I'll see things that I didn't see the first time around. I like doing that with games. It's like rereading a book.
I think this perfectly illustrates Will Wright's point. I don't think that we should be concentrating so much on the graphics here. It's not going to be a whole new game next year if you play with the graphics on high. It should be the exact same experience if you play them on medium or whatever you have, right?
And that's something that's surprising, guys.
I don't agree.
Well, experience.
It's the same gameplay experience. It is the same gameplay experience. It just doesn't look quite as good.
To me, differing levels of graphics do provide different experiences. I don't think that my analogy fits perfectly, but as a result.
Well, I played it on medium settings, and I was completely happy with the graphics. I thought they were fine looking. But my problem with the game was more about the gameplay experience, which you guys said. I mean, the thing that applies to any graphics setting.
And let me tell you, I'm astonished by the AI. At how well
Me
these
too.
Guys died.
And how bad it was. I was just...
See, this I don't understand. I do not... What game has better AI than this?
We can't cut his mic.
Hey, I don't know. Maybe I wasn't playing on the hard setting or something, but I would shoot a guy. The guy next to him would have no idea where I was. I was right out in the open, 10 feet away from him.
I'm going to go out on a little bit of a limb, and this is going to be a controversial statement. I know I'm going to get shot down for it, but, you know, with Dan, I think, but a lot of you guys seem to be almost kind of militant in your defense of this game, and I think it's got something to do with the fact that it's the PC's big exclusive flagship title for the holiday. My contention is this: if this were a multi-platform title that was also on PC, it was just as good as it is, but it was also on PlayStation 3 and Xbox this holiday season, you guys wouldn't be spooging over it the way that you are.
I disagree.
No.
Of course you disagree. That is bull.
Gary, I can honestly say that's not the case. I am one of those people where if it's a good game, it's a good game. I don't care what platform it came out on. Obviously, I prefer the PC myself, but no, if it was a cross-platform release, I wouldn't feel any differently about it. I would be amazed that they would be able to have done some of the things that they did in this game on the 360 or PS3.
It's not
part of what I was surprised by, I don't even know if we can even talk about this on the podcast, I certainly won't mention the actual number, but I got my issue of PC Gamer yesterday, and when I saw the score that you guys had given it, I was astonished by that. I'm fully prepared to believe that I am wrong on this, and it's a really good game, and it's a game in the 90s, but when I saw the actual number you'd given it, that really gave me pause, and I'm like, what, really? That good? Come on.
For one thing, the game gets nothing but better from where the demo ends. Just it goes up and up and up.
Yeah.
It gets really much better than just, you know, fighting a few guys on an island.
I wonder if they did themselves as a disservice by releasing as a demo the weakest part of the game.
It's the very first level.
But you said it only gets better and better after the demo ends. So the demo
is the worst part. I think what Dan's talking about is that like every level, I'm more astonished than I was in the last level.
Right,
like,
and it doesn't make sense for them to give away the best part of the game either. I think what they did in the demo is, you know, give you a taste of one, the visuals, because you can play it on high, very high, in DX10 mode, and also the new gameplay mechanic, which is the suit. And, you know, for you, if it's not your gameplay style, then you don't have to buy the game. But I think the vast majority of people playing online who've played the demo, they like it. They think it's complete. I mean, and even the people who think it's just Far Cry 2, they think it's incredible. One, it looks amazing, and the new gameplay mechanics work.
I wish I knew why the feel of the game frustrated me so much. It just kind of felt like the level of recoil. I mean, even with the strength mode on and everything, I felt like I was constantly fighting with the weapon to get it to stay on target. And
I was missing
bullets, and I was hitting with anything.
It's not Call of Duty. It's not Gears of War. It's definitely not Half-Life.
And I wasn't trying to play it like that. I was going prone. I was crouching. I was firing in short controlled bursts. I just felt like I could never hit anything.
You gotta be very patient.
You saw the video I posted. I mean, I took out three guys with less than half a clip.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Maybe just in my old age, I just suck at games now. But
you don't have to rely on the accuracy. You can go stealth and you can run up to guys and grab them and then throw them in the ocean and just kill them one at a time that way.
Or at each other.
Yeah, you don't have to just rely on the gun, and that's what Crysis offers.
You're gonna have to punch them.
And to your point about it coming, you know, what if it came out on other on all systems? I've tried playing with the gamepad. It doesn't work. I mean, even it's a Games for Windows game, so it fully supports a 360 gamepad. The game is designed to be played with a keyboard mouse. It's just like Gears of War. It's for some parts, it's better to be played with the gamepad because it's balanced for the big screen, for playing far away, and with the gamepad for the 360 console experience. Crysis is a game fundamentally designed to be played with the PC.
The other problem that I had with it, and again, this kind of goes back to the technical side, is, we mentioned this before. I still don't get the idea. This concept of quote unquote future proofing to me is a load of nonsense. I don't understand why the game, why there's apparently a level of performance on this game that just isn't available to me. I tried to play the DirectX 10 version. People go, oh my god, in DX10, the game looks amazing. No, it doesn't. It's a slideshow. And that's on a real, as slow as you think the game is in DX9, when, you get all your settings and everything down, and you go, okay, right, this is running okay now. And then you try DX10 mode with those same settings on, unplayable. And this is on a machine which is in the top 1% of what's available out there right now.
Yeah, but so, did you play BioShock maxed out? I mean, they maxed out.
Oh yeah, I played BioShock. Everything was on absolutely the highest setting at 1920x12. And now you try to do 1920x12 on Far Cry, you're lucky to get 5 frames a second.
Well, that one went right back in my face. Yeah.
And here's what I don't get about this whole argument. Why does it make the game less valuable that they add more stuff that you can't play now but you can play later? Why is that less valuable?
I don't think Gary's saying it makes it less valuable. I think Gary is having a problem with everyone basing it on the highest graphical settings when
we're not
less
basing
than 0.1%.
On the highest
which is what our
argument is because the problem is it's smoke and mirrors. A lot of the previews and a lot of the hype for this game were talking about features and graphics and amazing things that were going to blow you away that simply are not available to you now.
I played it in DX10, the game that was in the previews
is not actually releasing this month. It's releasing in like a year when you can actually play it.
Gaz, the game looks fantastic on medium settings. It looks
I thought it looked pretty good on medium settings, but it was not. It did not
what
blow me
better?
Away at all.
What
looked
better?
Yeah. I personally thought Episode 2 looked better than this.
No, it did not. Just look at the character faces. Look at the environments and the things they do with the environment. You don't get that density of foliage, especially
The problem with the character faces is that you get into that kind of Beowulf area where, there's the uncanny valley kind of dead-eyed doll where the characters look almost so real, they just look kind of weird and disturbing.
But they look better than Half-Life 2, right?
No, again, that's subjective. They may have more polygons and they may be a closer approximation to a real human face, but you get into that area where it starts to look a bit weird because of that.
You're actually now complaining that the graphics are higher quality.
No, they're not higher quality. There's a difference between higher resolution and higher quality.
All this talk about graphics, you guys, I mean, it shouldn't be about the graphics. It should be about the experience that you had playing.
Let me just clarify one thing. When I reviewed it, I played it on DX10. I wasn't playing on a Cray supercomputer or anything like that, and I had very good frame rates. So it is possible on today's hardware.
Which settings were you playing on, Chuck? Do you know?
I don't remember all the exact settings, but they were high.
It was all high.
DX10 is just a whole other world that's just not available to us right now.
Keep in mind the game isn't out yet, and the version we played, I mean, the demo, I mean, the newest NVIDIA patches aren't out yet. There is going to be a final NVIDIA driver that's probably going to come out when Crysis comes out to optimize performance.
This sounds like a conversation we should come back to once the game has actually come out.
Yeah,
everybody can play the full game.
Well, just so we all know, that the perfect card for gamers that want to play Crysis, according to Javat Yearley, one of the Yearley brothers who made Crysis.
He's the CEO of Crytek.
Yeah, and he was the actual director of the game.
Yeah. He is saying that the GeForce 8800 GT is that card. And boy, what a card it is. Norm and I got a chance to peek at it for the first time last week. And it is a very small card. compared to the GTX single slot card.
And yeah, it's going back to you know, the form factor that you know, video cards used to be, like,
yeah,
a few years ago. Because now there are these, you know, giant things that take up two slots, and, you know, they have that whole cooler on top that takes up all the extra room. This is finally
back
down
to skinny.
Slim.
I mean, 8800 series has been out for almost exactly a year. The GTX came out 1 year ago, and the GTX is still NVIDIA's high-end card. ATI has not come back with a card that's matched its performance in DX9 or 10, so that, they have no reason, NVIDIA has no reason to upgrade their high-end. What they have done is release this 8800 GT card, which is, in their mind, if you remember the GeForce 4 series, the TI 4200, it was the perfect price-performance ratio mark. And this card for $200 to $250, that's based on the 256 or 512 megabyte video memory settings or configurations, is going to give you performance that's close to the GTX for $250, which is half the price of what you can get for GTX right now.
Dun, dun, dun.
So basically, and it's SLI-able and only requires one 6-pin power slot. So what that means is for $400, you're going to get, you know, much faster performance than one GTX, and it will be the optimal card for playing Crysis and DX10 games.
Has that been benchmarked?
We don't have final benchmarks yet, but stay tuned.
I don't know. I don't know if we can say that the GT two GTs SLI'd will be much higher performance.
It has been benchmarked. It has been benchmarked. It is.
I mean, that's what we're saying initially.
One point, I mean, it's significantly faster. And it kind of sucks for everyone who bought the GTS series. I'm sorry, I think, Jeremy, you got the GTS card. They're going to be phasing out the 320 megabyte version of that card. And the 640 megabyte is still going to be, they're still going to sell that. But the GT actually surpasses the GTS 640 megabyte performance.
Now, is this a card that's going to support DX 10.1?
No. That is the caveat. It's not DX 10.1 compatible. It's a new architecture. It's the G92 chip from NVIDIA, but it's not DX 10.1.
But, okay, who here is actually worried about DX 10.1? Like,
and nobody should at this point. You know,
DX
10.1 is a minor revision, and all the games that are going to be made are all going to be compatible with DirectX 10 hardware.
And I mean, you're not really going to notice the difference between those.
We haven't done our final benchmarks with the GT yet, but from all indications and from the technical specs, it is going to be the card to get if you're building a new system and you don't want to spend $480, $500 on a GTX or $600 on a 8800 Ultra. You can get a very fast and incredibly fast DX10 card for $200 that's overclockable, too.
Just to clarify, this new GT card is less powerful than the GTX, right?
Yes.
Less powerful than GTX, but
more power than the GTS.
In some specs, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't want to sound like it's, you know, there's a big ad for NVIDIA, but the significance of this release, if the performance is what they claim that it is, is that
so far
finally,
we think it's those claims are pretty good.
I mean, this is like what the TI 4200 did for DX8, we think that's what this card can do for DX10. It's going to make DX10 much more affordable, and it's going to encourage, I mean, it's one solution to the whole chicken egg thing. No one wants to put DX10 games out and have lots of DX10 enabled features and visuals because not many people have DX10 cards.
How cheap is this card again?
It's going to be $200 for the 256 megabyte version. And I know ATI has had a great... ATI's had a great DX10 card out for a while. The XT?
XT.
Right.
XT 2900.
Yeah, 2900 XT. But, I mean, because NVIDIA has that brand recognition and this card is genuinely faster than the 2900 XT, it's going to be the card that I think we're going to end up recommending for people if they want to, you know, proof their systems for DX10 and encourage developers to start actually putting money into... You know,
oh yeah, I mean, for me, it's like we get letters from people all the time asking, you know, I've got $300, like that seems to be around the sweet spot. So I have $300 to spend on a graphics card. What should I get? And this is the perfect card to recommend for that.
Is the 8600 series not DirectX 10?
Yes, it is.
The performance just isn't there.
Yeah.
I mean, this is that it has superb performance at a price that just can't be beat.
And next week, in a special episode, Norm will be marrying the 8800 GT live on the podcast.
I love the way that Norm says, like, oh, we don't want to be doing NVIDIA's job for them. Then he comes out with superior performance at a price that just can't be beat.
I mean, that's what it is.
Norm, put it down. Please, put it down. Give it back to me. Give it. Ew!
In my pants.
Ew!
In my pants.
Oh, why is it sticky?
Ew! Hey everybody, we hope you've slid out of your sugar comas because we've got a very special guest with us today at the PC Gamer Podcast. We have Kevin Neunangst, Global Director of Games for Windows, here to answer reader and listener questions about the Games for Windows program. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning.
Did you have a happy Halloween?
I did. It was fantastic.
Do you have kids?
I do. I have two. I have a 10-year-old and a 3-year-old.
So I gotta ask, do you do the whole razor blade, you know, the magnet over the apples thing to freak out your kids?
No, actually, you know, one of the nice things about working at Microsoft is that we actually have trick-or-treating in our building, so the kids can come in and go from office to office, and so usually we don't have to check for things there.
Nice. You can just clean up office to office. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, and you don't even get cold. You just run, you know, 10 feet away, there's another bowl of candy. It's a good deal.
Oh, it's paradise for kids. Yeah, because when I was a kid, my dad just got into the drama of it, you know, just dumping all the candy out into the table, and we're sitting there twiddling our thumbs, and he's going over each piece with the magnet, and it was really dramatic. And I kept thinking, please, please let one apple just go. But it never happened.
Yeah, no, I grew up with a dad who was a fireman, right? So people would bring their candy to the fire station and have them check it out. It was.
Oh, awesome.
So yeah, we were terrified of anything but, you know, wrapped chocolate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad there wasn't anything fishy in anybody's candy this year. Let's go ahead and go to the reader questions we have for you.
Hey, great. PC Gamer, this is Kyle from Sacramento. I think you're all great, so no hurt feelings, but my question is for the Microsoft guy on next week's show. It's hard for me to take this Games for Windows thing seriously when, I mean, I'm all right with XP. It works fine for me. And then the big highlight of Games for Windows is Halo 2, an ancient console game which you can only play if you lay down hundreds of dollars for a new operating system that you don't need. I mean, this Games for Windows thing just seems like one tiny part of this massive push to get gamers using Vista. If not, I'd like to know why you think so. Thanks.
Okie dokie, Richoki.
Wow, interesting question. You know, and I think for people to say that Halo 2 is the extent of our Games for Windows effort certainly is the wrong assumption to make. I think particularly right now, what a great time to be asking that question, because November is this month is when I think the titles that many of them that we wished for shipping at Vista's launch are becoming available, right? Whether it's Hellgate London, whether it's Crysis, whether it's Gears of War.
I'll back you up on that one.
The Games for Windows effort overall is much broader than even just any particular title.
I will definitely back you up on that one. November is when it's payday for PC gamers. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
Let's go on to the next question.
Hey, this is a question for Kevin and Microsoft about Games for Windows. Why aren't we seeing more PC-exclusive Games for Windows games? The Xbox 360 has Halo and now Grand Theft Auto, but where are the games that Microsoft is pushing as the quote-unquote killer app for the PC? I know that Crysis is going to be PC only, but that's more because the console simply can't run it with all the effects. I'd like to know which game or games Microsoft sees as the Halo for the Games for Windows platform. Thanks.
Wow, great question. And again, you know, it's somewhat related to the first in that, you know, he used Crysis as an example. I think Crysis is probably the closest thing we're going to have to our Halo, if you will, right? It is a game that takes full advantage of every piece of hardware, every piece of software that you can throw at it. Hellgate London's another fantastic game. Age of Conan, that's coming out, you know, early next year. Another great game that I think, whether it is on the PC or on the console eventually, right, these games are debuting on the PC and pushing the limits of what's possible today and will grow with people as they add new hardware.
And when does Age of Conan come out?
Yeah, I believe the it's first quarter. I'm not sure exactly
quarter,
the exact
great.
Month,
okay.
But it's first
Super.
Quarter.
Okay. Let's take
Hi,
another reader.
Elliot from Edmonton. I'm a longtime PC Gamer reader and first-time caller. The question I have for you is about your Games for Windows interview. And I was wondering to know, when will we start seeing Xbox Live Arcade games and demos on Windows Live? That's all I need to know. Thanks, and keep up the great work.
So the history of Xbox Live, right, we started with the service and then brought out Xbox Live Arcade later on in that life cycle. Games for Windows, we introduced Games for Windows after Vista launched. Games for Windows Live, I should say, after Vista launch. We then, at E3 this year, announced that with Gears, we're bringing that to XP. We're continuing to add functionality. We are going to bring that arcade functionality. We aren't going to commit yet to a time frame. We're already working with developers and publishers to make it a fantastic service when it does launch.
Awesome. So so you do have plans in place to bring arcade to Windows?
Absolutely.
Hi, this is Jordan from East Lansing. I have a question about the Games for Windows initiative. I see where it's a good idea, and I understand the whole idea of wanting to bring gamers together and bring gamers together with 360 gamers. But what are you going to do to compete with the Steam community? It seems like it does everything but the cross-platform play, and it supports every game out there, not just Steam games. So you have a library of 5 games or so versus a library of thousands, and I'm just wondering if Games for Windows is going to start supporting outside games or if there's anything else. Thanks, and PC Gamer guys, keep up the great work. Bye.
So Games for Windows Live, and I should just draw some clarity here. The Games for Windows effort is the name for our overall effort from packaging and branding and marketing and us really stepping up to drive PC gaming as a platform. Games for Windows Live, which the caller was asking about, is specific to the service that we're building, the online multiplayer friend service. I think this now is the time when we're starting to see more titles shipping. We did launch with a couple. We didn't have a huge library. Gears will be out. We've got Sega. We've got other partners on board. I think there's a couple things that we're doing specific to what they asked about. One, we've not done a fantastic job of getting the message out about Games for Windows Live and what it offers. First of all, it's a free service, right? People tend to think if they've heard Xbox Live, because there's a lot of messaging on Xbox about the value of going gold and buying a subscription, multiplayer play on the PC with any Games for Windows Live title is free. We're also working super close with our partners to make sure that we've got great titles available, whether they're from Microsoft or not, right? We've got, mm-hmm. A bunch of games coming out. Then, of course, we're going to continue to evolve that service and add things like we just talked about with a live arcade type feature on that service where you can download games. And that in addition to the connectivity of the console, I think is what's going to make it unique. And there's great technologies like matchmaking, the ability to review players and be matched with people that play in the same, like playing the same type of games that you play that are going to differentiate us over the long term.
Yeah, this is for the guy at Microsoft who's doing the games. I was just wondering if there is going to ever be a Space Cadet 2, that neat little pinball game that came with Windows. I thoroughly enjoy that and would like to see a sequel sometime in the future. Thank you. Bye.
You could hear the longing in his voice. That was so sweet.
You know, that's not unusual, though. When I go out and talk to people, it's funny the attachment that people have for the game that we ship with the OS, right?
Uh-huh.
And it's usually a love-hate relationship. You're either super passionate about it, or, you know, like Minesweeper, people just despise it, but love it. They play it over and over, but you just, you know. And so, actually, it was funny. When we did the pinball game was shipped, I believe the last OS we shipped that in was Windows 2000. You know, we've had a lot of people ask for that to come back, so you never know, right? In an arcade-type environment, you never know what could come out. It'd be a perfect place for that to show up.
So hang tight. We're with you on that one.
Yeah, hang tight. We're with you. You never know what's going to appear. But in the meantime, you know, you can have a lot of fun with what's in what's in Vista today.
All right, let's take another question from the audience.
Hey, this is Herman from Pomona. Got a question for Kevin. Kevin. Seems obvious that Halo 2 and Shadowrun were released with Vista only caveat to increase the sales of Vista. haven't bought it yet, don't plan on buying it. I was wondering if there's any patch that's going to come out that'll port it over to XP. Thanks. Bye.
So, you know, I do want to take issue with something that was said there. The comment that the caller made was that he believed that we released Halo 2 and Shadowrun to increase the sales of Vista. And I think, you know, the clear effort there was Microsoft Game Studios saying, we've got a brand new OS and we've got a couple of titles we're going to bring out. Let's do something that's unique for Vista users. And at the time, Games for Windows Live was Vista only. So it made a lot of sense to align those. You know, we'd have to, the right guy to talk to about whether they're going to do any additional work on those games is Shane Kim. And I know that if you look at the, who runs Microsoft Game Studios, but I know if you look at the roadmap for games that are coming out, we've got a lot of great titles coming out in the future. So,
fair enough. Okay, so Kevin, after you've been with the Games for Windows program for over a year now, right?
Yeah, a little over a year.
Okay, so what's coming up for 2008? You got a big year ahead of you. You know, the groundwork has been laid. So what's coming up in the next year for Games for Windows?
You know, it's really about the titles, right? And it starts both at the end of 2007. You know, for us, when we started this effort a year and a half ago, it was our recognition that we wanted to step in. There was no real platform leader like there were on every one of the consoles, right? Mm-hmm. No one was investing at retail. No one was investing in basics like common packaging and, you know, even stepping up to do marketing outside of the individual titles. And we felt that both because we are Microsoft and because of the fact that we're always more successful as a company and as industry when we step up and drive and create those opportunities, that's what we had to do. So that you started that with our retail efforts, all the things that we've set aside that we've said we're going to do. We wanted to bring, you know, publishers together, introduce that common brand. We said we'd bring our live service that was born on the Xbox and bring that over to the PC. And I think if you look to 2008, you know, what's going to change there? I think we're going to continue doing more of the things that work. We're going to continue to invest in retail. We're going to continue to improve the quality of PC games. Things like the branding as a great example, where we could have just gone out with a logo program like many other companies and even other parts of Microsoft have done, right? Mm-hmm. Stick a logo on a box. But instead, no, we said we're going to invest technically to make sure we actually test those games and that those games install easier and they support things like widescreen support, right? And there's no consistent implementation of things like that. There's no guarantee that you're going to get that in every game. So that we're going to continue to invest there. The titles that we've started to see taking advantage of the new graphics technologies like DirectX 10 shipping in November, right? We're going to see more of those in 2008. The live service that we've talked about, Games for Windows Live, will continue to get better, and we would expect things like, you know, the arcade functionality to start appearing and get in the hands of developers and have them start building experiences there. That's really the starting point, I think, for what's going to happen. It's really just about getting everybody focused back on the PC, getting them excited and seeing what the promise is. The other thing that's going to happen that always happens on the PC is hardware changes so quickly, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We've already started to see, you know, when Windows Vista first shipped, we were all, you know, looking at, you know, NVIDIA did a fantastic job getting the first DirectX 10 cards out there. Over the year, we've worked with them this year and making sure they've evolved the drivers. It's getting faster. It's getting better. They're working with so many publishers who want to take advantage of that. And I think what we're seeing, as excited as we all are about the titles coming out this holiday, it's going to get even better next year.
Great. We have Service Pack 1 coming up in January, and with it, DirectX 10.1. What can gamers expect from that?
You know, DirectX 10.1, you know, we talked about as our to developers early, as we always do. We telegraph way ahead of time what we're doing. It is a very minor update to DirectX 10. We fully expect that the focus and all the investment, both the cards and the game developers, everybody's targeting DirectX 10 as the baseline, and there's so much headroom for what they can do. That's really what the news is. And 2008 won't be about DirectX 10.1. It'll be around how the developers are taking advantage of all the new tools we've given them with DirectX 10.
Great. So I think the overall message there is don't panic.
Yeah, absolutely right. It's a minor update.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Kevin. It's been a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Hope we'll hear from you again. We always have reader questions for Microsoft.
I love the opportunity to do it, and I like your podcast, so I'll keep listening in, and anytime. I would love to hear it.
about people's lives, so give me a little credit. Scout rushing me with his little baseball bat. Needles in your face, punk, take that. This might hurt a bit, come and get it. I'm your medic, but you can call me Captain Spaulding. The guy on your team, always in the top three. You're like, Captain Spaulding, who would charge me? We're dying over here, can't get past a sentry. So turn your head and cough, cause you just got raped. My steam rating says eagle scream. You wish you'd wake up like it was a bad dream. You thought you killed me, but I was just winged. I'm your medic.
I haven't seen Chuck enjoy a song that much since Kitty Cat.
Don't say it.
Since what?
Since Kitty Cat Dance.
Oh god.
You really got into that.
You know, Jeremy, you should just play the whole thing at the end of the podcast for people that want to hear the rest of it, because the rest of it's pretty good too.
We're gonna put it up on myspace.com/CaptainSpaulding Live. That's SPALDING. That's the latest from Spaulding and me on the wheels, and the mouse wheels of steel.
All right, gentlemen, let's take it to playlists. My brief affair with Portal was unfortunately cut short by the arrival of our Crisis Gold Masters. So that's been day and night for me. Chuck?
I've been playing a lot of Painkiller Overdose, the new prequel to the original Painkiller, and I'm also playing Time Shift as well.
I was working on University of War, and now I've gone into Empire Earth 3, and working in some Crisis, just running around. I'm playing some Delta in there just to test myself, because I went through the first time on hard, and then I went back, and I just tinkered with the config files to give myself like super energy recharge on my suit, and like slow down the drain rate on stealth. So I was, running around the first few levels playing Predator, which was awfully fun. But then I got tired of cheating, so I went back to playing on hard, which is also very rewarding.
Oh, playing Predator. I just got it. Sorry. That was good, though.
Yeah. And in a few minutes, Logan will get something we said last week.
I resent that. Norm.
I've been playing a lot of Gears of War for PC, being the new missions and playing with keyboard and mouse, which is great, but I do find myself going back to the gamepad for some of the levels. Also, just starting Call of Duty 4 and, of course, playing Crisis.
Okay.
And something
Gary.
Else too, right?
Oh, and I guess Guitar Hero 3 for PC.
Da, da, da. Gary, if not Crisis, then what?
Well, I have been playing the Crisis demo. Certainly Team Fortress 2, occupying a lot of time, as usual. You know, we've got a little regular PC gamer crew that like to go on there now. Let's see what else. I've got Gears of War here. I'm probably going to give that a try. I'm curious to see what it's like on
PC. Did you play it on
PC.
The Xbox?
Well, what's cool about this version, apparently, is because I have played it on the Xbox. Uh-huh. The Windows version allows you to jump straight to the new content, so I don't have to play through the game
to see
the new levels. So I like that. And then let's see. I did pick up Manhunt 2, kind of out of morbid curiosity. I wonder if there are rumors actually that there's going to be an uncensored PC version available. That's one of the strengths of the PC, I guess, is that you don't have to worry quite so much.
Which version are you playing?
I'm playing the PlayStation 2 version.
Oh, okay.
Well, actually, PSP gamers have hacked the PSP version. It unlocks the morbid content, and
they have already hacked it. Yes.
Yeah. If it comes out on PC, it'd be even easier to unlock that content.
They hacked it just to play, so it just plays Hostel 2 instead of the game. So.
Well, see, yeah, I was wondering, like in the Wii version, are you actually stabbing with the nunchuck and?
You are, and that's one of
that's
the big
really unpleasant.
This is why the Wii version has really been most controversial. Is the combination?
Yeah, I think
mimicking
I
some of those.
Gary
motions.
And I talked about this a while back.
And also the fact
Gary
that
Gary had said that this crossed the line.
Yeah, it does. I think it does. Yeah. When you're actually kind of physically making a stabbing motion and, you'll grab someone behind and you'll kind of draw the Wiimote to the, from left to right as you're like kind of slashing someone's throat.
I know it's somewhat arbitrary, but I agree.
To be fair, it isn't, you're not really mimicking them. It's a highly abstracted version of,
but
the actual
still,
motion.
It evokes
it's led to all this controversy because, you're doing these motions, and obviously it's more like, stabbing, but also because it's on the Wii, which is, kind of the console, that everyone's talking about right now. It's Nintendo. It's a brand that everyone knows. It's the family brand. And so it just seems like a really kind of weird combination of a game, this brooding and violent, on you know, kind of the happy, friendly yeah. Disney console.
I'm actually very surprised that Nintendo said okay to it.
Me too.
The yeah. Nintendo version is not, it's worth mentioning, though, the Nintendo version is not, the Nintendo version is not the same game as the PS2 version. There's a couple of things that are different. First of all, when you're actually carrying out one of the executions, there's a mini game that's going on. So like when you're seeing the guy like stab the guy to death, you actually are supposed to be kind of doing the stabbing in time with it. So there's an extra element of the gameplay there, which some people, you know, have just found yeah. distracting. And also the executions are massively more censored on the Wii. You know, you look at that video that we saw and it's just kind of absolute, just horror brutality. Yeah. The PS2 version has inserted these kind of blurs and filters over it, so you can't quite see the horror of what's going on. The Wii version does that even more so. It's almost completely obscured.
Now, I think that crossed a line, so why was that?
Well, okay, I just don't think that there is a line to be crossed. I don't think it's anybody's right to tell anybody what they can and can't play. I think that's stupid. And I think that I do agree that this is something that is gruesome, and I don't want to play it. And I don't
what if in Manhunt 3, Dan, you were playing like an escaped sex offender who was like grabbing kids off the street and dragging them down dark alleys and like sodomizing them and murdering them? Would that be on the shelves?
Yeah, I don't think that people would buy it.
But you do think that should be allowed onto the shelves?
Yeah, if a store is willing to sell it, and I don't know why not. I mean, do you think that's going to make people grab kids off the street and sodomize them? I don't think so. I think
maybe there is a line though. Maybe you do eventually come, and I don't think Manhunt 2 is there. But you know, I do think at some point it's possible if you really went all out just to try and cross that line where it'd be impossible to find anyone that would really defend this, even on First Amendment grounds. I do think there's a line somewhere. It just exists in different places and different people.
The First Amendment is the First Amendment. I mean, it's not really negotiable until there is a direct threat made against somebody else, or
doesn't protect
you
hate speech. What if in Manhunt 3 you were a Klan member going around, you know, killing ethnic minorities?
Well, that First Amendment wouldn't protect hate speech. So, yeah.
Okay, so there's a line there.
Right. But this graphic portrayal of violence, yeah. Graphic portrayal of violence is not that. I mean, it's basically a kind of messed up pornography, but pornography is legal.
Don't get me wrong. I agree with you. Like I said, I think as offensive as Manhunt 2, it's more offensive that Rockstar had to go away and cook up this stupid compromise. I mean, it's difficult, you know, it's easy to say this from, you know, just kind of sitting here, from a business perspective, it's very different, but I would love to have seen Rockstar stick to their guns and say, you know what, we're just not going to release it. This is our vision for the game. Maybe we'll sell it through our own online store, and if you want to buy it, you can. But, you know, if Walmart and whatever say the only way you can get this on our shelves is by compromising your vision for what you think the game is, then, you know, we're not going to do that. Rockstar have said, we didn't neuter the game. We didn't really make any changes that take away from what the game is. Yeah, they did. They changed it a lot, and I think it's a cop-out.
CBS actually did some really good coverage of Manhunt that surprised the hell out of me, because they actually had Dr. Phil on as an expert. Who said that?
Oh, that's impressive.
That renowned video game expert.
Exactly. Who actually said that the game wouldn't cause your kids to go out and do violence, which kind of surprised
Whoa,
me, given the level of violence that they had. And they had the guy playing the Wii version for him, and he was sitting there stabbing at the TV. And then they did something really cool, which was to actually instruct parents on how to go into the Wii settings and turn on the parental controls so that you can keep mm-hmm. your kids from playing M-rated games.
That CBS report wasn't as reactionary as some other media coverage that we've seen, but it was a little bit all over the place. I watched it as well, and they did open up. They did admit at the very top of the report by saying, now, of course, there's been no scientific evidence at all to suggest that playing violent video games actually makes kids violent. So I was glad that they got that out, you know, right up front. But they did, I kept waiting for them all through the report to say, when, you know, you keep going on, the whole premise of this report is how this game can have a bad effect on kids. But it's not aimed at kids. It's not legally for sale to kids. Like, when are you going to admit that, somewhat crucial.
Well, it is legally for sale for kids. It's not
policy. Okay, but I mean, obviously, there are systems in place to prevent it from being sold to kids. It's not intended for kids. And I said, when are you going to get to that? And they eventually did, but even then they had to qualify. They said, now, this isn't meant to be sold for kids. It's M-rated. It's only for people 17 and over. But that doesn't really mean much, of course. They can always get an older brother to go in and buy it for them. But okay, but again, why not do a story about how porn is bad for kids? They could get their older brother to go buy that. I mean, it really felt like they were, even though they knew that the facts were kind of against them, they were going to do what they...
Porn did wonders with me. Sorry, yeah, right.
Porn has been out for decades. This is new.
You know, I got to say about Dr. Phil, I'm not surprised that he said that this isn't going to make you go out or make your kids go out and do violent acts, because what I really don't like about Dr. Phil is all he does is state the blatantly obvious. So in this case, that worked in our favor.
That's
actually,
why
Chuck,
they call him by his
porn,
first name.
Pornography on home video and video games have actually been around for roughly the same time.
on home video? But if you're talking about magazines, it's been around for far longer.
Oh, I was just thinking about how kids can f*** up their brains in front of a TV set. But
well, I think we can all agree that Sorbet is overrated. Jeremy, what are you playing?
Let's see, a little game called Zack and Wiki on the Wii, which was supposed to be a big sleeper hit. I don't really recommend it. Guitar Hero 3 on the Xbox, which everyone's kind of ragging on, saying it's too hard. I actually kind of like it. And of course, Far Cry 2, the demo, which was awesome.
You know, Jeremy, you might not like Crysis, but I can't stand Guitar Hero.
Did you guys see all the cool hacks that are available for the demo? I gotta go back and check those out. Like, you can get a helicopter, tanks, every weapon in the game.
You can unload. Oh, you can load single weapon, and
it's not a hack. It's the editor that's built into the demo, or that's distributed with the demo.
Right. You change the demo level and then load yourself back into it with all the weapons in the demo editor. They included all the all the weapons.
Well, they also apparently let you use a lot of the DirectX 10 stuff in DirectX 9 if you go into a config.
Well, not really. It's fake. Because DX 9, like, there's a misconception that DX 10 has a feature set. There is no feature set with DX 10. It's just that graphical effects that you could run DX 9 are turned off for DX 9 and can be enabled in DX 10 because frame rates are better. And it's
DirectX 10
not,
does it. DirectX 10 does the same thing you can do in DX 9, except it does it much faster with less of a performance hit. So you can you can pull off these effects without totally bogging down your machine.
But some people are saying that the effects are actually faster. You get a smoother frame rate in DirectX 9 mode.
They are wrong.
Not the post processing.
I'm not sure. I'm just not sure why Crytek actually disabled those effects, and you have to go into a config file and copy and paste to make them enabled.
I don't know why they. I mean, I know why they did that, but I think it's something we probably don't want to discuss. We'll talk about it later.
Guitar Hero 3 is getting a bit of a hard rap. You know, it's actually a perfectly decent game, but it seems to have emerged as the redheaded stepchild to Rock Band, which is the game everyone's actually excited about.
Yeah, it's all Prelude to Rock Band.
Yeah. Well, is it just that, okay, so if you're a Guitar Hero 2 master, then Guitar Hero 3 is for you, otherwise it's just too tough?
Oh, no, I play it.
It is harder. It's the hardest one.
It's harder, yeah. I think if you're... I don't know why we're talking about it, because there is no Guitar
Hero 2. It's not for the PC.
I mean, Guitar Hero 2 is not for PC. I think, and we haven't reviewed Guitar Hero 3 for PC yet, but I think the positioning is because both came out this year. If you're just getting into the Guitar Hero series, you probably want to pick up Guitar Hero 2 for 360 and then ease your way into Guitar Hero 3.
Why not just play on easy on Guitar Hero 3?
Because it's not as fun.
Oh.
You know what, you guys? I've had a great time, and I'm glad y'all joined me. I'm glad you, the listener, have joined us, and we'll see you again next week on the PC Gamer Podcast.
All right, if you want to subscribe to the magazine, you can always head over to pcgamer.com/subscribe. And we'd like to hear from you, so send your MP3 questions in. Send an MP3 question to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com or call our toll-free number, which is
877-404-1337, extension 724.
Awesome. We'll see you next week.
Tap your mic.
No, it's not working. It's coming through my mic.
Tap that mic.
Wow. You should have seen how panicked Logan was.
I was not panicked. I was cool as a cucumber.
So flustered.
He's on his third
I don't want to have any part of that cucumber.
How about some of my pickle? You want some of my pickle?
That was a steamy.
Oh.
Stop it.
Okay, all right.
There is unsanctioned gaiety going on.
La 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 la. Cue music. This is like the episode where Jan lost her... Sorry.
What? What happened to Jan?
When she lost her glasses, remember? And then she, like, thought everyone else had...
Well, we just made a reference that was older than most of our listeners.
Whoa!
You know, Steve,
well, I think we can all agree that rum raisin is a delicious ice cream flavor.
I love rum raisin.
Not a fan.
You know, CBS did some surprisingly good coverage.
I hate to do this, but I don't like rum raisin.
Oh, gee, you know what? That's it. That's it. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Is that my
final podcast? The final podcast.
We officially cannot agree on anything.
You could have said so many flavors that I could have jumped on and got behind
but
you.
Did.
You had to
but
say that
did.
One, didn't
Jeremy,
you
were jumping in with something there. To...
Logan, mint chocolate chip is the true uniter amongst
I'm not in.
Oh, see, that's my favorite flavor.
That's
they,
disgusting.
You said that. We all could have got behind that.
I don't like mint
that's
chocolate
chip. That's disgusting.
You seriously don't like mint chocolate chip?
No, I don't. That's
like
gross.
It. Vanilla?
Yeah, of course.
Like vanilla has got to be the great uniter.
Yeah.
I like
pro vanilla. I voted the vanilla ticket across the board last year.
I'm pro vanilla. So Jeremy, when
patience
the eventual Far Cry 2 demo comes out, are you going to refer to that as Far Cry 3?
If it's better than Crysis.
Oh.
Later.